Today is June 5th, 2013, and this is episode number 207 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, number 27 of 101 Dalmatians. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
I'm assuming that the new pen name you'll be using for articles is Cruella De Vil.
No, she's, I think, trying to cut me open and make a coat out of me.
Yes, and what a supple coat it will be. But you know, if you're going to, I should just stop there, huh?
Yeah. But I have 100 brothers and sisters who. Just really
who
yappy.
Are slower than you.
Yeah, just yappy.
Yeah.
Yappy.
You know, it's not about being the fastest. It's just about being faster than the other puppies that are about to be made into a coat.
It's true. It's true. It is true. So,
what show is this again?
I don't know. Why did they let us do this?
It's because they haven't figured out how to get through the door yet to stop us.
Ah, of course. Actually, don't you remember a few weeks ago we had people like left? We had people hiding in bushes. We had bushes.
Yeah. Yeah, I talked to the maintenance crew, and that's why you have that new lock on your door.
Oh, I see. Well, that makes sense. Nonetheless, this is the Apple Context Machine for good or for ill, and you are listening to it also for good or for ill, but
and that's all for this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything,
no, we have things to talk about.
Oh, sorry,
we do. Next week is WWDC.
Yes, it is, and I am cautiously optimistic that we will have really cool announcements.
Oh, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to the remake of iOS 7, the facelift.
Yeah. I'm really excited to see what is coming with iOS 7, and with OS 10 as well. But yeah, I really want to see what they show off for iOS 7.
Yeah. You know, what do you think is going to happen? So, you know, we know that iOS 7 is going to be looking quite different because Sir Jonathan Ives has been tasked with making that so, right?
Right.
So the question is, what's going to happen with the reactionary part of the Apple fan base?
You're going to have two camps, I think. And in one camp, you'll have the people saying, oh, thank God, we're finally getting rid of the stupid stitched leather. And then you have the other camp that will be saying things like, you know, it was fine the way it was. It made the iPhone and iPad feel more personal. I don't want a phone that looks like Windows.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think it's going to look like Windows, though.
I agree. I don't think it's going to look like Windows either.
I think it's going to be really, really interesting. I think, as a matter of fact, I think that Jonathan Ive has the talent to take us in just a completely fresh direction that ups the ante on usability.
Yes, but I don't think he's going to take us all the way this year. So in that sense, he's going to be a tease. But
hey, did we talk about that recently?
We probably did,
because I think it's going to be a statement. I think this is going to be a statement event, and that they're going to go. They're not going to be dipping their feet into this. This is going to be I am Johnny. Hear me roar.
I remember that now, which is amazing because typically I can't remember what I had for lunch, Where I think this is going is that Apple's going to make a very strong statement.
Oh, we have a bet on this, don't we?
Yeah, we have our dollar bet.
We have a dollar bet, right. Someone needs to get on that spreadsheet.
Yeah, because clearly I can't even remember what I had for lunch.
Yeah,
so
I can't
please,
remember that either.
Someone, have my back. But I think that instead of going all the way, Apple's going to take us in some major steps so that instead of having to learn iOS from scratch, we will just have to learn parts of it over.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Whatever.
Man, I can't wait to get that dollar.
You're so going to lose that bet, man. You're so going to lose that bet. But we did talk about that recently, so let's talk about some other things that we think we're going to see at the show. It's looking to be, as you told me right while we were prepping the show, jam-packed full of announcements and events.
Yeah, if all of the rumors are right, Apple is going to announce new laptops and a new Mac Pro and radio or internet music streaming service. And then, of course, we do know that iOS 7 and OS 10 10.9 are going to be previewed. And unless Apple is going down the path of the Gandhi-length keynotes that some other companies are doing, I don't think they can announce everything that the rumors are saying.
Well, I really want for new Mac Pros to be part of this show, part of this conference.
I do too, but I don't want to get optimistic that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But I would like to see it happen.
Yeah. I think that the new Mac Pros are what's being built in the facility that's in development in Texas. It's possible that facility is not online yet, in which case, of course, we won't get that Mac Pro announcement. And then Mark Gurman over at 9to5 Mac, he's very, very well plugged in with some sources that know stuff about Apple. And he just put up a piece saying that we're definitely getting new MacBook Airs. So that, to me, takes a lot of the steam out of the notion that there's going to be a Mac Pro announcement.
Yes. I would have to agree. And these MacBook Airs, this rumored MacBook Air, one of the things that is being tossed around with that is a new Wi-Fi in it. So 802.11ac Wi-Fi.
If that's what does that
the
do?
Case. In a nutshell, faster, more robust. And if that's true, that means that we'll be getting new Airport Extreme base stations.
Yes, that would in fact make sense. It doesn't seem like Apple's going to announce a laptop that uses a Wi-Fi that they don't also have a base station
right.
to support.
Now, for that could just be a quiet update.
Yeah, and it can be just a bullet point, you know, like and note that we have a new version of the Airport Extreme that supports it. That's all they need for that.
And they may not even do that. They have done product updates that where they introduce new features that require accessory updates, and they just update that accessory without right. any fanfare.
Right. And considering how much there is to show, because, you know, we're looking at iOS 7 and looking at OS 10 10.9, those are two time-consuming things, especially considering the stunning overhaul that we're going to get with iOS 7 and the dollar you're going to owe me.
I can't wait to get that dollar. Hey, those of you that are listening that actually are going to keep track of our bets in a spreadsheet for us, there's a nickel in it if you manage to make sure the spreadsheet always works in my favor. Was that my out loud voice again?
That was. I don't fly, homie. Because, you know, that's how I roll.
Yeah, well, the likelihood that someone is going to let me bribe them for a nickel... I don't think you have to worry.
Fair enough. So with so much to show in iOS 7 and probably so much to show in OS 10 10.9, there's a limit on how much time we can spend on things like hardware, because we've also got this iRadio announcement coming.
Yeah, there's that.
And I think that the rumors on this service are at a stage where it's all but confirmed.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. There was a time when I was pretty resistant to the idea of Apple starting a streaming music service, but there's so much information that's been coming out over the past few weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's coming. Now, if it happens at WWDC, what that tells me is that Apple was able to get last minute negotiations to come together with the record labels, because
enough of them to launch.
And my guess is that they want to launch with at least three, and they're hoping for the big four.
Right. Right. And what was the one that was rumored earlier this week? It was Warner Brothers or Warner Music, I mean?
Yeah. Universal and Warner are rumored to have signed. And Sony is apparently the big holdout. And they are concerned in part over how Apple will handle payments for songs that listeners skip through.
Yeah, that you don't actually listen to because, you know.
Because they want to get paid for stuff even if we don't listen to it.
Yeah, I really love that.
Well, it's like when I go to the grocery store and I pay for pickles even though I don't eat them. What? Oh, wait, that doesn't happen.
That's right. It does not happen, as a matter of fact. But that guy's got... The guy that's ahead, I forget his name right now. I've blocked it out. The guy that's in charge of Sony right now used to be in charge of Universal, and he's the guy that I've mentioned in the past who's just angry about the fact that Apple actually makes this stuff work. That Apple is able to put an online store that works and you know that people actually want to buy music from. He's just angry about it. And
you know what he should be angry about is the fact that he hasn't been able to do it well himself, and it's a computer maker that is.
Yeah, well, that's the disconnect that some of the music labels have, especially this clown. And yes, sir, I'm calling you a clown. I don't know, it drives me nuts. So I don't know if Apple is going to be able to get Sony to come around. I know that the rest of the labels are very keen on Apple actually making this service work. They think that they can make more money, and they think that Apple will dramatically expand this market for streaming music. I agree with their assessment, and hopefully they'll be able to put enough pressure on this guy to sign. But I think that Apple will go without it. I think Apple could actually go with as few as two.
They could. Well, I mean, if they really wanted to, they could go with one, but then it looks kind of lame.
Apple wasn't afraid to launch some of the TV and video stuff with a very limited set of studios and networks.
Yeah, but this is a different time. When they did the TV thing, there wasn't really anything else out there that you could make a direct comparison to. Right now, there is.
But no one likes those things. No one's making any money. Not even the companies. Pandora doesn't make the labels any money. Pandora doesn't make any money itself. Spotify's not making any money. They're not making any money for the labels. Artists aren't making any money. No one's really making money with the current structure that's happening with this stuff. So, I mean, there's definitely impetus for some change if they think that they can make money.
There is, but I'm thinking more of the end user perspective or perception. Excuse me, perception. When they look at Pandora and they look at Spotify and they look at Rhapsody and RDO, they see a really big music selection, or what they perceive as a really big music selection.
This is true.
And then if Apple rolls out with Universal on board, and that's it.
Well, Universal and Warner.
That's right. Universal and Warner. Then the perception is that Apple has a very meager music selection.
Yeah, that's true. That's a really good point. The perception, this is one of the situations where perception is reality. And I want to make clear that Pandora is very popular with users, and as Spotify is also very popular with users. I'm not bagging on those systems when I say no one's making any money. I'm bagging on the economic realities, many of which were actually forced on their business models by going to a sort of default court scheme for licensing.
Yes, and actually this is a place where, if the rumors are right, that Apple has a big leg up on the other streaming music companies, because apparently the terms that they gave to Warner for royalties is a little bit more than double what Pandora pays.
Right.
Which is not what Apple wanted, but that's apparently what it took to get deals to come together. That in and of itself may be enough to make the labels happier about being on board with Apple.
Well, that's what Sony wants. Sony was definitely looking for more money. So if Apple's willing to pay more money, and the question is, is the story currently that Apple gave Warner a different deal than it gave Universal?
It's unclear. What we know from the rumors is that the 10% or whatever it is that Warner is getting is substantially more than what's being paid to Pandora. But we don't know if Universal has the same deal. My guess is that they're probably, if not the same, reasonably close.
Hmm. Yeah, they should be. Apple has done a very good job of keeping identical deals in place for all the players in a particular industry. I'd be really surprised if they were to have abandoned that now. But you know, we'll probably if they have, news will leak from the label side of things over the next few months.
Yes. So yeah, I have a feeling they're talking about this about the same rates
yeah.
for both. And considering how much higher that is compared to Pandora, I can see where that might be the carrot that draws Sony in.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, it certainly could. It certainly should be. So, you know, we'll see on that. It really seemed like there was a lot of impetus to get this service rolled. I'm not sure why Apple is so keen to launch the service. I am sure that Apple will be successful with a streaming music service, but I wonder how much incremental gain it'll give to Apple in terms of strengthening the ecosystem. You were saying?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was internally wondering why announcing this at WWDC would make sense.
Right. Yeah, you would think this would be the sort of thing that would wait for the usual music-centric event that takes place in the fall.
Right. And I have an idea on that.
Do tell.
Which is, yes. So, first, Apple wants to get into the game sooner as opposed to later. And so they can make the announcement now when all eyes are on them. They don't need to hold it till September for an iPhone and iPod event. The other thing is, if they're putting features into to their own streaming music service, that will be enhanced when iOS 7 and OS 10 10.9 come out, then they want the service out now so that those new things can roll in at the future announcement.
Hmm. All right.
And if nothing else, it can be used as justification for why Apple would include an iRadio announcement at a developer conference.
Sure. Sure. I'll give you that. Another thing that I think that Apple is going to be including in iOS 7 is support for a mobile payment system. I do believe that is coming, and I believe that it's going to involve NFC. Now, the question is whether or not we're going to see that at WWDC.
All right. My guess would be if we see a payment system announced at WWDC, it will be presented in such a way that it's a kind of an open thing where Apple can make it flexible and it handles certain types of payment things now, but can do more later. And then this fall, when we get new iPhones that have NFC in them, assuming that's what happens, then Apple can say, oh, and here's the update that adds NFC support to our iWallet or whatever they want to call it.
Right. Yeah, it's true. I think that it would certainly be possible to craft a payment system announcement, especially aimed at developers, in such a way that Apple doesn't have to specify what's coming in the hardware. Because that's going to be the big deal, right? Apple doesn't want to say that the iPhone 5S is going to have NFC capabilities before it's ready to announce the iPhone 5S. Right?
Yeah. Apple doesn't want to tip its hand.
Right. But they can say, we've got this payment system, and we're going to get into details on how it works on the hardware side later in the year. Right? They can say that and get away with it. And everyone's going to understand, really, that means that at least part of it's NFC-based. Or that it, at the very, very least, even leaster than the least that I just mentioned is the very least, would be that there's some aspect of the hardware on the iPhone 5S that's going to take advantage of this.
Yes. You have no idea how much brain cycle power it took to process the least or least thing.
Sorry.
That's all right. I got through it all, which is why I was able to come back and say yes.
But to sort of speak to your point, I can see Apple waiting to announce a payment system until it officially releases iOS 7 and a new iPhone. I can see that happening.
I can see that happening, but it also doesn't make sense, because if Apple is creating a payment system that they're tying in at the system level, wouldn't it be cool if that could link into other applications? And if it can, developers need to know about it now so they can be building their apps to take that into account.
Right. That would be the case if that's the plan. Now, keep in mind that a wallet-based payment system may not be tied so much to apps, but to the retail experience, because Apple already allows apps to do payments through iTunes. That's been a part of it from almost the beginning.
Yes. What I'm visualizing right now, though, is something that would be kind of like Passbook, where you can have your retailer apps, they link into the wallet, and then you can have your loyalty cards for the stores linked into the wallet.
Right.
Much like you can do like with your Starbucks card and Passbook.
Right.
And then you can manage your payments through the wallet app, but it's tied directly to the retailer's app as well. So it would be very Passbook-like, but something that people can actually use easily.
Right. That is definitely a possibility. We haven't seen a lot of rumors about this being part of this WWDC, but what we have seen is a lot of rumors about it coming. So I'm not 100% sold on this being part of this particular event. The keynote is on Monday. I'm not 100% sold on it being part of that keynote event. I am 100% sold on it coming with the next iPhone at the latest, the next iOS version, the next iPhone. So it's, I think really it's just a matter of whether or not Apple is ready to show it off yet.
Right. You know, what if Apple's also looking at NFC as something more than a payment system? Like with some Android phones, you can get NFC stickers that you put on things. And so when your phone gets near those stickers, whatever it is that you've pre-programmed to make happen will happen.
Right. That's one of those features that is super awesome that I don't think many people actually get around to using.
I would agree, but what if it's built into everything Apple's making?
Yeah, I think that. Well, I mean, if Apple puts an NFC chip in the iPhone, which it seems like is, I mean, really, it's only a matter of time before that happens. I mean, it's a readily available technology. When Apple does it, it'll be something that we can take advantage of in such a fashion that you just mentioned, and it definitely needs to be at the OS level. I'm I mean, that's certainly something that I would set up to use. You know, I'd have stuff set up for my car and for my home.
Sure. And then what if Apple licenses that out to third-party companies? And so now you get a Nest that not only can you control remotely, but when you walk through the room, it knows that you're there.
Yeah, sure. Sure. And Jeff's talking about the Nest learning thermostat.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah, things like that. Yeah, of course. And things like, tie that into AirPlay. Tie that into, I don't know, there's all kinds of things that can be done with NFC.
Or an iWatch.
I mean, certainly with an iWatch. I don't think we're going to see that announced this particular keynote event. But there are all kinds of things that can be done with NFC. Now, the interesting thing to me is that the NFC is one of those technologies that has been included on a lot of Android devices. Not even a lot, but it's been included on some. Certainly, a lot of the high-end Android devices, NFC has been included for a while now. And it's really nifty, but like I said, there aren't many people that are actually doing anything with it. And I think that I think Apple's going to change that. You know, this is going to be yet another one of the many examples where Apple is late to the game, but they end up setting the rules for how it works and expectations.
Oh, I can totally see that happening. And look at USB. That was languishing until Apple decided they were going to run with it. And now everything seems to have USB.
Right, right. Of course, you know, at the same time, FireWire did not take off. FireWire is pretty much gone, as a matter of fact. Thunderbolt hasn't taken off yet either. So Apple doesn't always rule the roost, just usually.
Right. But there are many times when Apple has come into a market late and then actually brought life to that market.
Yeah, like the smartphone market, like the tablet market.
Right, like the portable music player market.
Yeah, like the digital download market.
Yeah. So, yeah, I could totally see something like that happening.
Exactly.
And that might be the catalyst that the market needs to finally start stabilizing. And then we'll get everyone, hopefully, moving over to a single standard for NFC.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Now, one thing that you and I didn't talk about pre-show, and I've been threatening to write this now for a long time, but I think we're going to get Johnny Ive showing us what he's done. You know, usually we only see Jonathan Ive in
the videos.
In the videos. The really, you know, the beautiful videos where you know, really he's talking about how something is designed and why it's designed and how they got there and you know, that sort of thing. And then there's some other people brought in too. But I think we're gonna see him up on stage delivering and showing us what he's done. And I also believe that him being in charge of the look and feel for iOS 7 is the first major step towards him succeeding Tim Cook when Tim Cook is ready to become chairman.
Now, that's an interesting idea. You know, Johnny Ive is one of those guys that seems so brilliant. Well, he is brilliant, but at the same time, kind of shy.
Yeah, but he seems shy. He seems shy in public appearances, at least.
Yes, but if he is being groomed as an eventual successor to Tim Cook, then he needs to get comfortable speaking on stage.
Well, he not only needs to get comfortable doing that, he also needs some bona fides outside of the industrial design area. And that's the big thing. You know, I don't want to tip my hand too much on this piece that I've been threatening to write forever. But now I'm pretty committed to finishing it for tomorrow, about Thursday, for those who are listening. Nonetheless, I don't want to tip my hat too much, but, or tip my hand? tip my hand. I don't want to tip my hand too much.
You could tip your hat as well, but I don't think it means what you want it to
be. Yeah, fair enough. And just remind me to just edit all that out so people don't know what an idiot I am.
Oh, no problem.
Excellent. So when Steve got really sick and we talked about who could take over from Apple internally in the TMO Towers, Tim Cook always seemed the obvious successor because Steve kept putting him in charge when he would take his leaves of absence. And mm-hmm. but it didn't feel right to me because Tim Cook isn't a product guy. Now, I happen to think that Tim Cook is the perfect CEO for post Steve Jobs. More importantly, he's the perfect CEO for making sure that the Apple culture continues, which he has spoken towards many, many times. But mm-hmm. he's not a product guy. And so, you know, we used to toss around, like, you know, well, Scott Forstall's a product guy, but, you know, that didn't really seem right either. And Jonathan Ive is a product guy, but, you know, he doesn't have the chops to run a technology company. And now Scott Forstall gets terminated by Tim Cook, and he puts Jonathan Ive in charge of the look and feel. That's a software thing. It's Jonathan Ive getting dirty with the engineers. You know,
take that as you will.
Yeah. And I really do think that this is part of his training to take over for Tim Cook when Tim Cook is ready to be chairman. And I think that we're going to if we don't see Jonathan Ive doing his own presentation or at least taking part in the presentation for iOS 7, I'm wrong.
Well, then that means there's a lot of people that will be watching what happens during the keynote. And by the way, we will be there for those of you that are following along at home. We will be there. We will have our live coverage.
Right.
So you can follow along with us. But so people are going to get to potentially get a special glimpse into the future of Apple based on your speculation.
Yeah. At least I think so. I mean, the reality is that Jonathan, I guess I'm not really, I don't know what I'm always curious as to what I should call him. Sir Jonathan, Sir Johnny, whatever. Mr. Ive, being on stage doesn't necessarily prove that I'm right, but I think him not being on stage is a strong indication that I'm wrong. Because if this is part of his training, if this is part of his grooming, as you said, he's got to be able to do the public speaking, and he needs to become more of Apple's public face than he has been in the past.
I agree. And I really think a lot of the reason why he is in the promotional videos and not on stage is because he does have those public speaking issues. And by doing the videos, it's a very controlled environment, and they can do multiple takes, and they can edit. And
yeah, because he's an impassioned speaker.
Oh yes,
you know, when he talks about design, you just feel it across that screen. But you know, being able to connect with the developers will be real important for any potential CEO. You know, you got to have, you know, Steve wasn't an engineer. It's sometimes easy to forget this. Steve wasn't an engineer. Steve wasn't a designer. Right? I mean, Steve did have some engineering chops from his days at Atari, and right. And he certainly knew how to wield a soldering iron. He was there helping Steve Wozniak make those Apple Ones in the early days, for sure.
Right.
But he's not an engineer. He's certainly not an engineer at the level of Scott Forstall or on the hardware side, you know, Bob Mansfield and what's Federici?
Yeah, Federici. And it's funny because as you said that, all of a sudden I forgot his first name.
Mr. Federici is in charge of OS 10 and iOS on the software side.
Yes, Mr. Federici.
Right. So, Yes.
No, continue.
Excellent.
Continue.
We'll edit that out too.
Perfect.
And so Steve wasn't an engineer, but what Steve had was that design aesthetic. You know, Steve knew how things should be, you know, at least in his head, and he made that sort of thing happen. Well, Jonathan Ive is certainly someone who shares that passion. But like I said, he's got to have those bona fides. He's got to be able to prove that he can work with the engineers, that he can speak in those in those you know, the terms that engineers are going to respect and be able to work with, et cetera, et cetera. And so anyway, I think that's what's coming. And not anytime soon.
I mean, no.
I think this is a multi-year process.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I do not see Apple aggressively grooming Johnny Ive to take over as CEO right now. This is a long and calculated process, because Tim, I think he's doing a perfectly fine job as CEO.
He's doing a great job.
And I don't see any reason why he should leave.
And I don't think anyone else could do the job that he's been doing. I'll have more on this in my editorial analysis column thing that I'm going to put up on Thursday. So that is what we're expecting with WWDC. And oh, there was the other thing too. The other thing that Tim Cook mentioned at D11, and that was that Apple is going to be opening up more iOS APIs to developers in the future, quote unquote.
Yes, and I agree with your speculation from before we started recording today that Tim would not have let that out if Apple wasn't planning on having some sort of announcement related to that at WWDC.
So, what could that actually mean? Does this mean that Apple's going to be like, all right, forget it. Of course, they're not going to be going. I was about to go off in a completely ridiculous direction. But let's talk about some of the things that they might actually open up. And one would be Siri. More of Siri.
Yes, that's the first thing that comes to mind for me. And I would love to see that happen.
And same thing. Oh, golly, what is it that Maynard Doom wrote today? Do you want to talk so I can look?
Well, okay. One thing I would like to see happen is, as part of this, is for Apple to let users set an alternate default email and web browser, so that when you're tapping smart links in emails and other documents, that they open in the applications you actually wanted, instead of forcing you to use Mail and Mobile Safari.
Boy, that would that be a said, change. That would be such a change.
That would be a huge change.
So like keyboards too? Because I can see it happening with keyboards before I can see it happening with Safari.
You know, I would love to see the Android swipe keyboard come to iOS.
Yeah, a lot of
people. And yes, I know if you jailbreak, you can do it. But I mean for regular muggles to be able to just use the swipe keyboard.
Right. Well, there's a lot of people who have made similar comments. You know, there's a lot of people who have made similar comments. And I can see that happening before I can see it happening with Safari. But it could happen with Safari. It was Ben Ritas who made the comments that he was expecting APIs for Siri and iCloud, that more of those would be opened up, both of which make sense. I mean, you know, Siri is we've talked about this. I've certainly written about it a lot. Oh, we should mention Grokker. But
yes, we should.
The Siri is a long haul play for Apple. You know, what we see with Siri today is, I don't know, 2% of what Siri is eventually going to be. Siri is specifically Apple's long haul play to leapfrog the current dominant interface, which is the touch interface that Apple itself used to leapfrog the previous dominant interface. And I think that Siri Siri is a really big deal. So the idea that Apple is going to open Siri up to more developers going forward, to me, has always been a given. And it does seem like this would be a good time to make that happen. And so I think that we'll see that, especially, again, with Tim having just said that at D11 that Apple would do so in the future.
Yeah. And, I'm getting all excited just thinking about the possibility Siri opening up.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, this is something I've wanted since the day Siri was announced. And I've always felt like, I've always been very frustrated because I love Siri. Siri is my girlfriend. I love Siri, and it is so useful, and I want to use it more.
Yeah, I want her to be able to do more and more and more all the time. I use Siri all the time. I'm quite pleased with Siri. Siri is definitely the bee's knees. But you know, one thing, so this is where the Grokker rumor comes in. And that's the notion of like, how does Apple compete with Google now? And Google Now's big strength is presenting information to us before we ask for it.
What's Grokker?
Grokker is a third party company. It's a small independent company that, they had an app for the iPhone, that was designed to present information to you before you ask for it.
What a clever idea.
What does that sound like? It sounds like Google Now.
It sounds a lot like Google Now.
And Mike Elgin over at Cult of Mac did some outstanding analysis. And he looked at the fact that Tim Cook said that that Apple has bought 9 companies in the last 8 months, which is, you know, a big step. I think we talked about that last week. It's a big step up in the number of companies that the company has purchased.
Yes.
And he thinks that Grokker may be one of them, not based on any kind of leak or information, but because just last week, Grokker pulled its app from the App Store. And this week, shut off service to existing Grok app users. And announced that they were going to be rebranding the service under the name Next.
Who owns that name? Because it sounds really familiar.
Apple owns that name because Apple bought Next Incorporated.
How about that? Yeah.
Back in 1996. So, you know, you put all this together, and it makes for and the fact that the Grokker technology is something that Apple could absolutely use to make iOS more compelling, and specifically even to make Siri more compelling. If Siri could start presenting information to us, either visually or audio or orally, before we ask for it, like Google Now, that will allow Apple to meet or beat the expectations that Google has already established with Google Now. Because I think Google Now is a very compelling thing that gives Google an advantage over iOS.
Google Now is very cool, and it's a very compelling product. And I love the idea of my iPhone and my iPad being able to anticipate what I'm doing as opposed to reacting to what I'm doing, which is how these devices work now. They have to wait for us to give them some sort of input, really, before they can do whatever it is they're going to do.
Right.
But Google Now changes that. And if Apple really has bought Grokker and is planning on deeply integrating Grokker into iOS, then the added bonus I see to that is that now I can avoid the Google Now thing of Google gets even more of my personal information.
Yeah, you gotta really buy into, you know, Google Now is available on iOS, but it's available as an app. And from that standpoint, it's already less useful than Google Now is on Android devices that support it. Because on Android, Google Now can actually take over your home screen and present information there.
But what if Grokker could do that for iOS?
Right.
Yeah. The system level integration, I think, is a critical feature for any of these anticipatory services. And without that, you're still stuck on some level with a reactionary service.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to make the most out of Google now, you really have to go whole hog. You have to go all in. You have to fully buy into the Google ecosystem. You need to give Google access to your email accounts. Of course, if it's Gmail, they already have that access, but you can give it access to your I've got a mac.com email address that I use for some things, and for my test with Google Now on iOS, that's what I plugged into it. I'm also testing a GS4, and I let them have access to that too. But you have to give them this access. You got to give them access to your contacts, your calendars, and all of which they use to build your profile. And then Google Now is them turning around and giving you back some of that information in a way that's beneficial to you. And if I could get similar features by giving Apple that access, I would, because Apple is not in the business of slicing and dicing and selling me off to the highest bidder.
And there's that. And for someone like me who has invested their databases in the Apple ecosystem, I really don't want to have to move all of my calendars over to Google, and I really don't want to have to move all of my contacts over to Google and now rely on Google to maintain all of that for me.
No, I don't either. I like being in Apple's ecosystem. Totally. So, long and short of it is, we may actually see this. We may get the slightest of sneak peeks, or at the very least, we may get the announcement that Apple has purchased Grokker at WWDC. I'm hoping so. First of all, I'm hoping it's true. I hope that they did buy Grokker. I'm hoping that's why these things happen with that company where they, you know, pulled their app and everything. But if they did do it, I'm hoping we get a sneak peek at WWDC just because I'm so excited about it.
Oh, that would be awesome. And I know this is something I bring up on a fairly regular basis, the Knowledge Navigator. But every time Apple makes an acquisition like Siri and now potentially Grokker, it gets me closer to turning my iPad into the Knowledge Navigator idea. And I just love the whole idea of having this tablet that can truly anticipate what I'm doing, can react to what I'm doing in an intelligent way, and really be an assistant as opposed to a data tool.
Now throw NFC into that too.
Yeah.
That was the sound of your head exploding.
Yeah, see, that's just awesome, because at that point, it knows what to do when I get near things. And yes, if I had a real life personal assistant, they know what to do when I get near things. That sounds so wrong. Oh, wow. I really should have thought that one through before I said it. Mm-hmm. But you get what I mean.
I do. So, you know, all of that combined, I think we're going to have a really exciting WWDC. I think we're going to see a lot of stuff. Even if all those things that we rattled off don't take place, there's still going to be a lot that's going on. And the new direction of iOS 7 in particular is a really big deal, and I can't wait to see it.
Oh, yeah. I'm really excited to see what's coming.
Mm-hmm. And how?
And how?
That got a, you know, that crooked arm fist thing that you have to do.
Oh yeah, the swoop that fist, yeah, exactly. Thing. Yep, yeah,
I totally got that. All right. Well, I think that we've gone on for a while now.
Yeah, I think we did really good for having one topic we wanted to talk about today. And we kept it to a reasonable length as well.
Yeah, or something like that.
Yeah.
Huh. Why don't you
take
us out?
Surprising. Yeah, I'll do that as soon as I'm done being surprised at how efficient we were. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything Wow. You can edit that out, right? And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening, and feel free to follow me on Twitter and app.net. I'm Jay Gamut, both places.
And you can follow me on Twitter at TMOBrian, that's Brian with a Y. Over on app.net, I am Brian Chaffin, still with a Y. Our content is written by the good people at The Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at The Mac Observer.
Man, I'm really glad that we do all those edits so that people don't realize just how stupid I am.